Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Can you believe this? 50 years ago this month, MASH came to life as a TV series on CBS. Our first half hour explores how MASH became a TV milestone. Andy Streitfeld and Brad Osborne, the executive producer and director of a special about MASH, playing later this month on Reels, and Fox executive vice president Dan Harrison, join me next. This won't be a quiet holiday weekend for the makers of new series Daily Flash Latino. More than 45 stations in LA TV will premiere tomorrow or Sunday. Learn more from executive producer Hugo Arenas next half hour. Also ahead, Lord of the Rings TV at last, and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker and Tuner Radio. I present on various podcast sites from iHeartRadio's Podcast Network to iTunes and Spotify. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Thank you all for joining us on this first Friday of September, day before Labor Day weekend. We hope you make it great, and we're happy you made us part of your Friday for the program all about TV's current and future. 77 degrees is happy hour here in New York. We have an amazing show for you today, and we invite you to get right into it. All you got to do is pick up the phone and dial in with this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, Tuner Radio. Or get involved in our chat room. Simon Apple 04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. While the promo is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions. We'll be live with you. Because we want to give as much time to our first subject, we're going to devote most of this half hour to that subject and our guest for it. And we will have news notes, we'll have the classic trivia question, and other things down the stretch in our second half hour. Also, for this half hour, no commercial, no promotional break, so that we can get as much phone calls and chat room reaction from you. So let's get right to it. Joining us live from Los Angeles, Fox Entertainment Executive Vice President and Super MASH historian Dan Harrison. Dan, welcome in.
Thanks very much, Simon. Fun to be here with you.
And joining both of us as well from Dallas, Texas, the executive producer of MASH, When Television Changed Forever, which will be premiering Tuesday night, September 13th on Reels, Andy Streitfeld. Andy, good to have you here.
Well, it's great to be here. I'm a lover of MASH.
Me too. And Dan as well, as you will hear. And we hope to have the director, Brad Osborne, joining us in a little while. Dan, we'll start with you. Why did MASH become such an incredible milestone of television?
Well, I think MASH, you know, there are only a handful of shows that are sort of on the Mount Rushmore of television syndication, and MASH deservedly is one of them. You know, it was set in the Korean War, which took place in the 50s. It was shot in the starting in 1972 when the Vietnam War was still raging. So you had a period piece. Those military uniforms, the haircuts, they're never going out of style. The 50s are always going to look like the 50s. So in that sense, MASH is blessed with a timeless, you know, setting, and then it's talking about life and death issues in the middle of a war, which is a topic we can unfortunately still relate to in 2022. So MASH is, you know, the way it was shot and what it was talking about give it a sense of timelessness.
And you have a very special relationship with one of the key people who made MASH what it started out to be, and that was Larry Gelbart.
Yeah, I grew up in upstate New York outside of Albany, and I loved MASH in the late 70s when I was still only approaching 10 years old. And when I hit around 12, I had watched every episode, and I loved it so much. I had no idea how a television show was made. And this was before the Internet, so I sent a letter off care of 20th Century Fox Studios, where I'm sitting right now, and sent it to Larry Gelbart and just had some questions. And amazingly, he wrote back. And even more astonishingly, we started a, you know, pen pal friendship. And of course, we met each other many times before he passed away in 2009. But we had a relationship for the last 25 years of his life where we were very close friends. And he really encouraged me to start a career in television. So the fact that I'm sitting here today, I have a giant picture of MASH signed by Larry and the cast, and on my wall as an homage to what he contributed to my life.
And before, we should point out, he was one of the key writers in the early years on MASH. He was also one of the great writers for Sid Caesar's Your Show of Shows and Caesar's Hour, one of the great comedy writers of the 1950s. Andy, When did you and your crew decide to do a MASH retrospective? What made it happen?
Well, we do a lot of work for Reels, and we do a lot of these one-hour documentaries on sort of cultural moments. We did a documentary on Love Boat. We had the entire cast with us for that. So about a year ago, we looked at the calendar and said, well, there's some anniversaries coming up. We should do something on MASH. And the network was very excited about that, and they brought Dan in early on. Who, once you have Dan, basically you have all the content. And we were surprised that no one else is doing 50th anniversary of MASH, which you think it would have been a big enough concept for someone else to do it. But we feel very lucky that we have the spotlight for us. And this show is airing, I think, 4 days before the show actually started airing back in 1972.
That's correct.
And Andy, as you were with your production team going through making this doc, what did you learn about MASH that you didn't that surprised you or that you had not learned before?
Well, I was a big viewer of MASH. I didn't write any letters to anyone like Dan did, but I remember watching it, and it was such a great show. And for lots of the reasons we know, it's a show. It's not really a comedy. It's not really a drama. It's got all these different things in it. And so I was excited to get involved in it. We were very lucky. I don't know if Brad is on yet, but to get a hold of Burt Metcalf, who was the sort of executive producer, I think, for the entire run. And he really nicely agreed to an interview, and he brought in Jamie Farr and Mike Farrell. So Brad then came out to California and interviewed all three of them at the same time at Mike's house. So that was an amazing event. And, you know, with those guys, we had most of the show we needed. We added some other people as well, but that was really, really lucky that we were able to get all three at the same time.
Dan, one of the things in researching this segment that I think people will find surprising is that, like other shows like All in the Family, Hill Street Blues, The Rockford Files, NYPD Blue, et cetera, this was a show that started out with terrible ratings. And I want to get into why, in part, because I think I have an idea or two. And this was a show that, watching it got going in the second season, became a top 10 hit. Believe it or not, it was moved every season for the first 5 or 6 years. The first year was on Sunday nights at 8 o'clock. The second year was on, after All in the Family, Saturday night at 8:30. Then it went to a Tuesday night show. Then went a Friday night show. And then ultimately, for the second half of the run, it went to Monday night. Did that surprise you? That MASH was able to get to the top 10 and pretty much stay there despite the change of time slots.
So let me just unpack all of that with you, Simon. It's great questions and comments. No surprise coming from you. Sunday night was a very tough night of television. And believe it or not, Saturday night, people were home watching television. Today, Saturday is the least viewed night of the week, and nobody programs original series on Saturday night. But 50 years ago, that was the night of television. So MASH struggled in the ratings in season one on Monday night. William S. Paley was the legendary chairman of and founder of CBS, and the story goes that his wife, Babe Paley, was a huge fan of MASH, and she suggested that he renew it. And so MASH was the lowest rated show of the 72-73 season to get a renewal by CBS. And it was moved to Saturday night, where it was part of a lineup that included All in the Family, The Bob Newhart Show, Carol Burnett Show. So really, these iconic CBS comedies were all on Saturday night, and that's where MASH became a hit. Larry wrote the first episode of the second season, where a psychiatrist comes and evaluates each of the characters, as a second pilot, because he knew most of the viewers would be unfamiliar with the show based on the ratings of the first season. You're right, MASH then became a hit, surrounded in that iconic lineup, and CBS started using MASH as almost a battering ram, moving it all over the schedule to counter-program other shows on other networks. And at one point, the cast had had enough and went en masse into CBS to meet with the head of programming and say, stop moving us all over the schedule. And that was when, after 5 or 6 moves, MASH wound up on Monday night, where it remained for its final few seasons and finished with the highest rating in the history of television on February 28, 1983, a record that will never be broken.
It is still the, that's the final episode, Goodbye, Farewell, and Amen, after 11 years on the air. It is still the single most watched scripted television episode in TV history.
Yes, Andy, but it is also the highest rated show in TV history, bar none.
Yeah, absolutely. Andy, does the program get into why the first year of MASH was a disaster in terms of ratings?
I don't know. We get it. We talk about it a little bit because I think we sort of had to establish that early on. And Dan would know much more than I would why it didn't catch on. It could have been a, you know, the time slot it was in. We only have an hour, Simon, and there's so much we wanted to cover in this documentary. It could have easily been 5 or 6 hours long. So we move pretty quickly through the history. We do talk about the book, and we talk about the MASH movie. We, luckily, we have Elliot Gould playing the original Trapper John, who we interviewed, and that was sort of a great way to start us into the series.
Yeah. What did Elliot Gould think about? You didn't hear Elliot while MASH was on the TV series talk about it. What did he think about the series?
I honestly don't think he either watched it much or remembered it. He had a lot of things to say about his own role in the movie, and that was fairly interesting, and a director he worked with who took a pretty very different approach to the movie. But I didn't do the interview, but I don't remember him talking about the series a lot. He did talk about Radar and how Radar was the only cast member that moved from the movie to the series.
Yeah. Dan, when MASH started in the fall of 1972, 20th Century Fox paired this as the second half of doubleheader of two shows that were adapted from popular movies. MASH was one, the other was The King and I, and a show called Anna and the King was on Sunday night at 7:30 on CBS. It had Bill Brenner recreating his famous role as the King. They made famous on Broadway, then won the Oscar for it in the film, and Samantha Eggar portraying the Anna role that was done on screen by Deborah Carr. There was a lot of hype about the show. That it was great pairing between the two, and as it turned out, despite what I thought was a good pairing and also a wonderful opening title sequence with very enchanting music by Jerry Goldsmith, I think one of his best TV things that isn't talked about a lot, you can see on YouTube, the show bombed, and the critics were very savage about it. When you see some of the episodes, you can sort of see why. It seemed that, despite the fact that Gene Reynolds, who executive produced both MASH and Anna and the King, seemed to not have an idea of what to do with the show. It came off as very sitcom-y, and I think it and the critics were just savage, and that may have been the big reason why the show ended up MASH ended up 45th in the time among all TV shows.
Yeah, so, you know, it's interesting. Another funny bit of trivia is that Anna and the King, 20th Century Fox Television, which produced both Anna and the King and MASH, the 20th Century Fox TV had much higher hopes for Anna and the King, so they gave it one of the largest sound stages on the Fox lot to shoot the show. MASH was assigned Stage 9, which is the smallest stage on the Fox lot. It didn't even have a bathroom, you know, in it when it started. And MASH wound up staying on Stage 9, of course, running 11 years, and Anna and the King was canceled after 13 episodes. But competitively, you had Anna and the King and MASH against The Wonderful World of Disney. Anna and the King was at 7:30 on Sunday. MASH was at 8. So between The Wonderful World of Disney and the FBI on ABC, it was a very difficult competition for MASH and Anna and the King, of course. But MASH was the one that CBS saved and moved into its iconic block on Saturday nights.
And again, it's very, very ironic that Gene Reynolds, who I think should get a lot of credit, along with Larry Gelbart for establishing the tone of MASH and did so well as both an executive producer and a director, was also executive producing Anna the King and just didn't seem to have the act together.
Gene was a very talented man. He passed away about a year ago. He was very strong on story for a guy who was an excellent director. And he and Larry formed an incredibly strong partnership. Gene also produced Room 222 for 20th Century Fox Television. So he was one of 20th Century Fox TV's top producers. He tried to get Larry, he flew to London to meet with Larry to discuss MASH and writing the pilot. And he convinced Larry. Larry had gone there and was working for Marty Feldman on a TV show in England. Larry agreed to write it. Gene went away. About 3 months later, he called Larry and he said, "How's the pilot coming?" And Larry said, "I just put it in the mail." Well, Larry didn't just put it in the mail. He sat down and started writing it and wrote it very quickly, put it in the mail. I think he might have flown it there to, you know, catch up on some of the time. And that became a very successful pilot.
Yeah. And thank you for mentioning Room 222, because Gene with James Brooks made that show fly. It's one of the great – I'm happy that now some of the episodes are on YouTube so people can enjoy it. It was a marvelous show. And Gene was one of the great – he was also a very good actor, then became a writer, producer, director, and did Room 222, did MASH.
Did
you don't
Lou
get
Grant.
Better than that. Really one of the most amazing talents in TV history.
Yep. He did Lou Grant after he left MASH.
Mm-hmm. So, triple header, all within the space, by the way, of a decade. Really, really
yep.
amazing. So, Dan, thank you for mentioning that and mentioning Gene's other work. And by the way, we're still waiting for Brad Osborne to join us. As soon as he does, we'll get him on. In the meantime, if you have a question or comment, come into the roundtable. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Andy, when you interviewed – or your people interviewed Jamie Farr and Mike Farrell and so forth, when did they think that the chemistry and everything about MASH, the writing and directing, all came together? How soon? And was there a turning point?
I think it took a little while. Jamie Farr tells this incredible story about him showing up. It was like a day role. It was not even Mike. He was on the series, I think, for the whole season. Dan would know that. But he showed up. He didn't realize the role he was going to play. And as he explains it in the documentary, there was his dress in the corner of the room, and somebody said, "Well, no, that's what you're supposed to wear." So I think early on, you know, this chemical combination, whatever we call it, of how people work together probably wasn't that obvious, although I'm sure that Alan Alda had a lot to do with that and was able to be the lead character without egotistically taking over the series. Dan, you can really talk more to that.
Yeah, I mean, the show was originally, you know, an ensemble show, and Alan emerged as the first among equals, which ultimately, you know, led to Wayne Rogers deciding to leave the show. But in terms of Jamie Farr, he was brought on for a one-day work on an episode called Chief Surgeon Who. Klinger, MASH started as a book, which is in the special, and then, of course, became a very successful and a movie that I believe won the Oscar for Best Screenplay. Ring Lardner Jr. wrote it, and Klinger was an original character to the television series. And so Jamie shows up, he shoots for one day, he plays the character in, you know, more of a fey way, and they watched the dailies and they weren't happy, and they brought him back and they said, "No, just play it straight, like you're, you know, just a guy who wants to get out of the army, a guy from Toledo who wants to get as far away from a war zone as you can." And so he did that and created an iconic television character.
Dan, some people believe that where MASH started to really get on the road to being an incredible series was in the first season, toward down the stretch. I believe it was an episode where a soldier dies in the operating room. And
sometimes
Hawkeye
you hear the bullet
duty in the operating room, and
yep.
he has a scene toward the end with McLean Stevenson's character,
yep,
Henry Blake, where he says basically, you know, you can't just take this, you know, literally. It's going to happen on again, and you just have to be with it. Did you get a sense if you saw the episode that was like the beginning of where MASH was starting to find its voice?
Absolutely. That episode is called Sometimes You Hear the Bullet. McLean Stevenson is talking to Alan Alda's character, Hawkeye, and he says, "Look, all I know is what they taught me at command school, and that is rule number one is young men die, and rule number two is doctors can't change rule number one." And so that was really the heart of that episode, and that was a friend from the States of Hawkeye who died on the operating table. So it was an emotional episode. You know, you have to remember in television in the early 70s, the writing staff on MASH was two people. It was Larry Gelbart and a talented comedy writer named Lawrence Marks. That was it. A lot of the scripts were freelanced out. And so MASH and Larry and Gene were finding their legs, and, you know, they kept getting better over the course of that first season, and then in year two, it really found its voice.
When did MASH, Dan, start to experiment with how the stories were unfolding? Like, for example, the episode where it's all on the viewpoint of particular the episode of the soldier who gets the throat wound, the interview episode with Pete Roberts, and then the sequel. And then, of course, the one that was really one of the great turning points, the episode where the very last scene you find out that a major character is shot down.
Yeah, I mean, MASH really started right away because television in the early 70s was very linear in terms of its storytelling. Whether it was a comedy or a drama, you know, you'd see a beginning, middle, and end of one story. And if you go on YouTube today and you watch some, comedies or dramas, they feel very slow. MASH is the exception because MASH – almost from the beginning started with three stories in every episode, an A story, a B story, and then a much smaller story. There was one episode that Gary Markowitz wrote that had, I believe, seven storylines in it. That's something Seinfeld did in the 90s, but MASH was one of the innovators. So Larry started the template with an episode called Dear Dad, where you'd have Hawkeye writing a letter home, and you would see all these different stories from his point of view. The episode that you're talking about, The Interview, was the last episode of the fourth season. Larry wrote and directed that, and that was his final contribution to MASH. That was shot in black and white. Yes, there was an episode shot in real time called Lifetime, where they're trying to save a soldier's life by getting an arterial graft in 20 minutes. The episodes you mentioned, Point of View, where you see everything from the point of view of a patient who has a throat wound, that was very difficult to do. You're not talking about shooting on an iPhone, which you could shoot a television series on now. And, in fact, I think Modern Family did shoot an episode on an iPhone. You're talking about 50-pound cameras. And so Charlie Dubin, who is one of the great MASH directors, did that Point of View episode. And that was technically very, very difficult. Ken Levine and David Isaacs wrote that episode, and I know that that's one that they are particularly proud of.
Mm-hmm. Andy, before I get back to you, let's talk about the role of the directors, because MASH had a bunch of great directors. I mentioned Gene Reynolds before, Charles Dubin, who was both a drama and a comedy director. Hi Averback, one of the great comedy directors and executives, was involved with F Troop during his 2 years on the air on ABC, did a lot of other great comedy shows, both producing and directing. MASH really had some of the top directors in Don Weiss, who was a wonderful both drama and comedy director for many years, did a wide variety of shows over his career. I mean, we're talking about the cream of the crop of episodic TV directors working on MASH at one point or another.
Yeah. I mean, who wouldn't want to be on, you know, MASH wound up getting – I think over 150 Emmy nominations over the course of its run. So who wouldn't want to be called to come in and get a directing assignment? Charlie Dubin was the most prolific director. Alan Alda, of course, he started his directing career on MASH. You know, Burt Reynolds and Gene Metcalf both directed a lot, but then you've got Jackie Cooper directed a lot of the early ones, Don Weiss, Hi Averback, as you said. Larry directed some, including his final episode, The Interview. And you really had just, you know, many, many great directors and many great writers through the show as well.
Mm-hmm. Andy, one of the interesting points in the documentary that I did not know about, I think it's going to surprise a lot of people, is about the final episode, Goodbye, Farewell, Amen. Originally, it was supposed to be a two-hour show, and it ended up being added by a half hour because of something that actually happened on the set.
Yeah, the set burned down, and Dan knows this much better than I do, but they had some issue, and something burned down, and they said, we'll just use that as a story feature, and then they were able to add that much more content to add half an hour. And Dan, you know the specifics of this better than I do.
Yeah, I mean, the exteriors of MASH were shot at the Fox Ranch, which today is called Malibu Canyon Creek State Park, and it's open to the public. And you know, so anybody can visit. But there was a wildfire that went through there and burned down where MASH shot and burned down the set. So they called CBS. They told them what happened and said, look, we can incorporate this into the story. Would you like a 2.5-hour show? CBS was selling commercial units, 30-second commercials, for $450,000 a commercial unit in that episode, the same price the Super Bowl got that year. So you can imagine what CBS said when they were offered an extra half hour.
Hmm. You know, Andy, what do you want people who see this documentary that you and Brad and your crew did, what do you want them to appreciate most about MASH 50 years later that they might not have before watching your special?
Well, I think to hear a lot of the details that Dan has mentioned in the last half hour, but I really would like some of the younger folks that maybe you're catching this show every so often on Hulu to sort of understand the background and history of the show, because as Dan says, it really is one of the best television shows ever created and produced, and there really aren't that many that fit in that category. We hear about Seinfeld a lot. Lucy, we hear about that a lot. We don't always hear MASH in that same group, and I really think MASH is truly extraordinary. And, you know, I appreciate it as a young person growing up, but I did not realize how really amazing it was until I got to work on this documentary.
MASH really, you know, MASH was the backbone of the FX cable network. A few years ago, another cable network, WGN, ran an all-day marathon on New Year's Day, an all-day marathon of MASH, and got the network's highest ratings in 5 years.
I would think that MASH, like I Love Lucy, is being shown somewhere in the United States and somewhere in the world any moment of any hour.
I think that's true. Fox used to market MASH to broadcasters around the world and say the sun never sets on a MASH episode.
And is it fair, so there's a closing question, is it fair to call MASH television's first great dramedy? Because we used to have the word comedy drama sometimes for a show. But it seems that because of the unique way that MASH sometimes told its story, because of the ensemble cast, because of the multiple plots that later on Hill Street Blues did so dramatically as story arcs in a particular episode. We had 3 or 4 story arcs go on and continue in like multiple episodes, 3 or 4 at a time. Is it fair to call MASH the first great television dramedy?
It is. It is, but it's almost a little bit of an oversimplification because there were episodes of MASH that were just straight out, flat out, some of the funniest episodes that have ever been made on television. There are episodes of MASH that'll make you cry. There are episodes of MASH that'll do both. MASH used slapstick. It used parody. It used black humor. It had all the, you know, it used everything at its disposal creatively to showcase the absurdity of war, but do it in a way that showed respect for the people, both in the military, the Koreans who were innocent bystanders, really, in the war, and to try and show, you know, the possibility of man's inhumanity to man and a group of people who are trying to save lives in the middle of the war zone. And that's really the triumph of MASH.
I'll add one more question since we have the time. Burt Metcalf and his role, because he seemed to become, along with Alan Alda, the heart and soul of MASH after Larry Gelbart and Gene Reynolds left.
Yeah, so Burt started out as associate producer on the pilot, and one of his primary responsibilities was focusing on the casting because that was where Burt came up. And then Larry left after the 4th season, Gene left after the 5th season, and Burt was there and kept the machine going and obviously took on the role of the executive producer beginning with the 6th season. So Burt was instrumental, and he was the only one of sort of MASH's big three. I'm not counting Alan in that only because he was also the star, but if he wasn't, he would have been part of that. Burt was the only one of those big three to be there for all 11 seasons, and it was great to be able to spend, you know, that day with Burt, Mike, and Jamie, and of course, sad that he has passed away before this aired, but wonderful to spend the time with him when they shot the interview.
Mm-hmm. And Simon, this is his last interview, and you can tell.
Two other people. Go ahead, Andy.
I just want to say that this is his last video interview, and you can really tell his love and enjoyment of Mike and Jamie, but also the show itself. So this doc is worth watching just to see Burt Metcalf, who isn't obviously seen all that much in interviews.
And Andy and Brad dedicated the show to him, which was, I think a tremendously classy move.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And before we go, I also want to mention two other key people I think that should get credit. Stanford Tischler, a marvelous film editor. I believe he won the Emmy Award for his work on that show. And the music theme, particularly by Johnny Mandel. He wrote the theme, of course, Suicide is Painless for the movie. He adapted it for television, also some other music too. A marvelous composer for both film and television. And he gets some credit too for making MASH a very, very special series. And you can find out more about this incredible show, which is now 50 years amazing, when MASH, When Television Changed Forever, premieres Tuesday, September 13th, 9:10 Eastern, 6:00 Pacific on Reels. Check your locations where Reels appears in your area on cable and satellite. And in some markets, it also runs on smart TV sets, smart TV devices, and multi-channel bundles. For more details about the special and the network, go to www.reels.com. That's reels.com. Andy Streitfeld and Dan Harrison, thank you both very, very much for coming on the program. Sorry that we couldn't get Brad on. We want to acknowledge his contribution with the special, too. Thank you both very, very much. Good luck with the special. Dan, a great pleasure to have you. You really are an incredible historian on this show, and I'm thrilled that you gave us your personal perspective on this. And to both of you, have a fantastic Labor Day weekend.
You too, Simon.
Thanks,
thanks
for
the time.
Bye.
You're very welcome. Take care. All the greatest.
Bye-bye.
Andy Streitfeld, executive producer of MASH, When Television Changed Forever, live from Dallas, Texas. And Fox Executive Vice President, Fox Entertainment Executive Vice President, Darren Harrison, joining us live from Los Angeles. When we come back, there is something new you can find starting tomorrow or Sunday on local TV stations and LATV Network this Labor Day weekend. It's a new series called Daily Flash Latino. The executive producer, Hugo Arenas, will join us live from Orlando, Florida, plus news notes and our classic trivia questions. All that after we pause after the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tune.com. Together, reaching over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, tomorrow at noon, it's Sports Talk Saturday. I'm sure that the folks catching that show have a lot to talk about, including first big weekend of college football, Serena Williams' big match coming up tonight on ESPN, and much, much more. Sports Talk Saturday, tomorrow, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, that's BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised. I'm the day before Labor Day weekend of 2022, our first episode of September of this year. Simon Abbott, I'm with you live from New York, New York. 75 degrees at the bottom of the hour. Another great guest coming away this half hour. Make a call and get in the conversation. Simple. The number you use, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Also, coming up before the top of the hour, classic trivia question. Your last chance to win three prizes with this particular question. But first, before we get to our guest, let's bring you news notes. Nearly 5 years after a declaration from Amazon, the first live-action television series inspired by J.R.R. Tolkien's trio of family classic novels, The Lord of the Rings, is a reality. The Rings of Power began its crime video existence this morning with universal rave reviews from TV critics and an 84% critic score on popular website Rotten Tomatoes. It's not clear if Amazon will release any viewership results for its opening weekend post-Labor Day. Amazon reportedly spent around $500 million to produce, market, and promote The Rings of Power's opening season, and that's on top of $250 million Amazon paid for the rights to make series from Tolkien's literature. We expect, if form goes the same way that HBO did with House of the Dragon, a second season might be formally announced and greenlighted, maybe more, sometime in the next few weeks, certainly before the end of this month. Italian dictator Benito Mussolini's rise to power over the first half of the 20th century will be dramatized in miniseries fashion. The project will be directed by Joe Wright, most famous for the Oscar-winning biopic Darkest Hour. Gary Oldman won the Academy Award several years ago for playing Winston Churchill in that film. Target date for worldwide distribution, late 2023 or 2024. Now some quickies. Byron Allen's HBCU Go Enterprise will simulcast a live 3-hour Black College Sports special tomorrow over various multi-channel bundles and TV stations. Start time, noon Eastern. More sports activity. ESPN, not ESPN2, will carry Serena Williams' third-round match tonight at the U.S. Open. Originally, college football game was supposed to be on ESPN with the U.S. Open and ESPN2. Last night, because of Serena Williams' success so far at the U.S. Open and her third-round match taking place tonight around 7 o'clock, 7:30 or so, that's due to the flip. And finally, another late shift of Law & Order series showrunners. Sean Dablonsky will take over that role on Organized Crime, replacing Fyan Golublup. Law & Order, all three series, The Mothership, Special Victims Unit, and Organized Crime will premiere later this month in a crossover event, three-hour cross event on NBC. And that is News Notes for today. For the last 5 years, one of the most unique efforts in all of syndication is a program called Daily Flash, where no matter where it's presented on more than 85 stations around the country, it's live with the latest news, plus lifestyle, and pop culture entertainment news features. Now, the Latino audience gets a chance to have its own Daily Flash starting tomorrow or Sunday, depending on where you are, with some 45 stations taking the show either in a half-hour or hour-long format in English or Spanish. It's also running tomorrow on the LATV network. Joining us live from Orlando, Florida, the executive producer of Daily Flash Latino. He's also a major executive with the entirely Daily Flash Enterprise, Hugo Arenas. Hugo, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Simon. How are you?
Very fine, thank you. How long has this version of Daily Flash been in the works for?
You know, Daily Flash, we've had great success. On September 8th, we're going into our seventh season, so we're very excited about that. And it's just a fun show. We don't do any salacious news or anything of the sort, and with its success, we're now venturing into Latino.
And how is the Latino format going to be similar and different from what you do daily?
Well, let me tell you, we've been tossing around the Latino concept for a few years, and it finally felt right. I always wanted to do it because I felt that I wanted to see people like me on TV. And by that, I mean people that speak like me. I'm an immigrant to this country. I learned English in this country. But at home and with my friends, I will speak in Spanish and English, something that they call Spanglish, that it's easy to switch back and forth between the two languages within one sentence. So we wanted to do that concept. But yeah, delivering the news and entertainment still, but with two hosts that could deliver a Spanglish concepts, which would attract that viewer that I don't see any shows right now on TV is attracting that viewer.
Mm-hmm. Now, is Daily Flash going to run the same way, this version going to run the same way Daily Flash does, where no matter where you watch it, it's live? Or are you going to do like one 30-minute version, one 6-minute version, and that's the one that will appear on the station depending on what they get?
Yeah, right now we're going to start Latino with the 30-minute version, and it's going to be the latest in pop culture or just funny stories. We want to bring feel-good TV to the viewer. So, yes, anywhere that you're watching, you're going to feel like that as if you're watching it live. Excuse me, LA TV, we're airing at 1 in the afternoon across all stations in the country. So it's going to be that feel-good TV to get your weekend started.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of the other station, the stations themselves, are they going to play it morning, afternoon, early evening? What's pretty much their game plan?
Pretty much the game plan right now for Daily Flash Latino would be 1 in the afternoon at every station across the country that LATV has.
Mm-hmm. And anything that's also going to be, in addition to running on stations on LATV, is also going to run on STIR, which is the multi-channel bundle done by Sinclair, the one of the top TV station group owners.
Yes, yes, we're going to be on STIR. We want to be on OTT platforms and all that. So we're growing the show, and right before launch, there's been a lot of interest already from both people that want to advertise on the show as well as people that want to bring their guests on the show.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about the format, and then tell us about the hosts that are going to be delivering it to people.
Yes, the format, it's going to be a weekly news and entertainment type show. We're also having guests both in studio and via Zoom, and the guests are ranging, obviously, Latino Americans. That's the audience we're aiming at. And so the guests could be anybody from an author to an artist, whatever it may be, you know, and people like, for example, Bad Bunny. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he just won the VMA. And he's the first artist, a Latino artist, to win a VMA who does not speak English. So he beat out all these Anglo artists. And so news like that, feel-good stories, we want to bring them to the audience. So that's the concept we're going for.
Mm-hmm. And talk about the two hosts, Jessica Reyes, who has actually done quite a bit of work all over the country, and also
yes.
Jean-Paul Lopez, who I understand is where you are in Orlando, Florida, and is sort of making his national TV debut with this series.
Correct. Jessica Reyes. She's a veteran in TV and radio. She does great work. She has a spark to her. And Jean-Paul, he's a newcomer to TV. And they have this chemistry together that they naturally play off of each other. And they really get into the stories they're reading and presenting to the audience. And we'll also be doing, like, TikTok challenges. I don't know if you've heard of the Tortilla Slap, for example. They're doing stuff like that, and they're open to having fun on the show because that's what they want the viewer to have fun as well.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about Daily Flash Latino. It's a new series that premieres Labor Day weekend on some 45 stations around the country, half-hour
yes.
format. It will also run tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific on LA TV Network, which is the network that is available on cable, also available as a digital multicast channel, also available on multi-channel bundles. It will also be running on STIRR, the multi-channel bundle produced by Sinclair, one of the largest station groups in the country. And it's from the folks behind Daily Flash, which runs on some 85 stations around the country, all sorts of time periods. And joining us live from Orlando, Florida, is the executive producer of Daily Flash Latino, Hugo Arenas. And he's ready to hear from you. So give us a call at 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Simon Apple, I'm with you live from New Haven, York. It's our first episode of September 2022, day before the big Labor Day weekend. We hope you have a fantastic weekend wherever you're going to spend it. I'll be spending it with my parents in New Jersey. By the way, I want to give a shout-out to my sister, Stephanie. She marks her birthday on Sunday. So, Stephanie, love you always. And thinking of you, hope you have a wonderful holiday weekend with your fantastic husband, David, and the great family down there in Maryland, which I believe is going to get their college football season off the ground sometime tomorrow, either on ACC Network or somewhere in the ESPN family of networks. So once again, if a question or comment for Hugo, make that phone ring, 646-652-2906. We'll use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. So next week we'll be with you two episodes, one Tuesday, not Monday, so that's because you get a full Labor Day weekend. It's Tuesday and Friday. And joining us on Tuesday, we'll revisit a network that we first covered earlier this year in the summer called 1S. It's a service that presents all sorts of interesting lifestyle, informational, unscripted programs. This time around, we're going to give you a look at two programs. One is called Discover Code Connect. We'll have the producer. She's also known as the Dutch foodie, Marianne Hoskold. And we'll also have the producer of a very interesting project called Khan Academy, Ellie Robshaw and Kirk Jordan. They'll all be with us on Tuesday, regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. What are some of the subjects that will be on the opening episode this weekend?
Some of the stuff this weekend, let's see what we're having on. We're talking about John Leguizamo. He's talking about how he's sick and tired of Latino castings in Hollywood. And this comes because James Franco was cast as Fidel Castro. So imagine that. That's a lot of controversy. So John Leguizamo was a bit ticked off about that because he says, how could they cast Fidel Castro to a non-Latino actor? So we'll be talking about that. What else do we have on this week? Well, I don't want to give it all away because I want people to watch, of course.
Well, I understand that you're going to be doing a number of regular features. One is going to be about TikTok trends and people. You're going to do a horoscope segment. There'll be like a top story of the day, Caliente. And also be focused on social media. I was very curious how much time you're going to focus on English language television featuring Latinos and Spanish language television, whether it's new shows on Univision or Telemundo or new services like Canela Media, Estrella Television, Extra TV, and some of the new things that they're doing there.
You know, my career, I've worked both for Telemundo and Univision, and both great companies. But I noticed when I was with them, we geared at Latinos that were mostly Mexico. We're doing a bit different today because I felt like all other countries were not being geared at. So we want to really gear it at Mexico, Cubans, Venezuelans, Colombians, across the board at everybody. You know, growing up in Miami, when I came over from Cuba, there was only one show on TV. There was a sitcom. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's called ¿Qué Pasa USA? What's up,
Very
USA?
Much.
And Yeah, Stephen Bauer started on that show. And I felt like I connected to that show because I saw people like me on TV. Now, we want to bring that to our audience. So we think our show will be different in that aspect. And just being able to switch back and forth between Spanish and English. And so we'll have a lot of segments. Like you mentioned, you know, we'll do the TikTok segment. We're doing horoscopes. Latinos love their horoscopes. We'll also have the Spanglish word of the day. And this weekend you'll hear the Spanglish word of the day, which is hanguear. Hanguear means let's hang out. So it's words like that that Latino Americans make up but make sense when in a conversation.
Are there any plans to cover some of the special events this fall that deal either with Latino or Latin American produced films as well as television? For example, here in New York, we've got coming up later this month the New York Latino Film Festival, which I believe is the week of September 12th, where you will find a lot of movies made by U.S. Latinos, for example,
yes,
or other festivals around the country that focus on both English and Spanish language television and so on and so forth.
Yes, we're in the talks with major networks already in studios to cover, you know, the Latin Music Awards, the Latin Grammys, red carpets for Latino shows and movies. So, yes, all that's in the works, either being there present or interviewing the celebrities via Zoom.
Mm-hmm. How close to air date do you do the show? Is it done, let's say, like late on a Friday for the weekend distribution? Do you do how close to air date do you produce the show?
We produce the show about 3 days out from airing.
Mm-hmm. So Wednesday, Thursday would probably be the or Tuesday, Wednesday would probably be the like the deadline.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Talk a little about Daily Flash, because you're like head of production for that. How is it going into season 7? What have you learned from doing this kind of a program where, again, one of the key things is that no matter where you are, whatever station carries it, gets it live.
What I've learned from doing Daily Flash, season 7 already, you know, one of our hosts, Mitch English, he's a veteran in TV. He brings the comedic side to everything. And I've worked at several news and entertainment shows, and we really, really, really try to stay away from salacious news. You know the old saying, if it bleeds, it leads. We don't believe in that. We want to do feel good TV for everybody. So I think our show's been a success until now because we bring that to the viewers. So anybody watching across the country, they get a positive feeling when watching Daily Flash. So that's what we're delivering to the viewer.
Mm-hmm. Are there certain films featuring Latinos or television shows featuring Latinos, let's say, coming up this fall, do you definitely want to highlight?
We highlight on Daily Flash every week, twice a week. We either do must-see movie or a must-see show. So we do highlight shows either on Hulu or Amazon Plus, any sitcoms or movies coming out. So we do definitely promote the movies or TV shows that are coming out.
Mm-hmm. And what about services like Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, HBO Max, Peacock, so on and so forth?
Yes, correct. We're in talks with everybody to also cover any special events they have coming up, whether it be red carpets or anything that it could be. Or if we're promoting one of their shows, obviously we reach out to them and let them know, and we courtesy whatever show or sitcom we may be promoting. And obviously any of these big people love the promotion. Why not?
Daily Flash Latino, the new spinoff show from Daily Flash, which runs in weekday syndication on stations around the country, also on some multi-channel bundles as well. This show will be premiering tomorrow on many of the 45 stations, or Sunday, on the 45 stations that are running around the country, and including many of the market. We'll let you know in a second who some of those stations are. And it's also running on LA TV Network tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific. LA TV Network, by the way, runs on cable in some markets, multi-channel in others, also on smart TV sets and bundles, and is also running on Stir. That's the over-the-top platform on smart TV sets and smart TV devices owned by Sinclair. We've got Hugh Arenas. He is the executive producer of Daily Flash, Latino Ways Live from home base in Orlando, Florida. Tom, I'm with you up north in New York, where it is now 74 degrees at near the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment on remaining minutes with you, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And stay tuned, because coming up in a few minutes, we have our classic trivia question. File time, we're going to offer it. Three prizes in play, and if you're first with the correct answer by email, you will win. KSA Entertainment, which is the company producing both this series and Daily Flash, they also have some other shows that you're working on. Talk about them. One is called Flash Fitness, and the other is called Life Love. I love the title, Life Love Shopping.
Yes, Flash Fitness with celebrity trainer Joey Thurman. That's going to be a half-hour show we're currently working on. We've done several segments with him already. He's really a phenomenal guy and a phenomenal trainer. Life Love Shopping, two great hosts on that show, and they're going to feature anything from the latest trends in shopping, love life, and just life in general. And then we're also planning a Flash Travel, which I won't give it away yet, but one of our hosts will be traveling around the country in an RV and just bringing you different highlights and highlighting different locations around the country. So definitely a lot of stuff on our slate right now.
And all these shows are once a week?
Once a week, yes. Except Daily Flash.
What are some of the major market stations that are going to be running Daily Flash Latino starting tomorrow or Sunday?
Los Angeles, Miami, New York, Dallas. Those are some of the major stations.
Okay. Great. So you're a few hours away from getting the first episode off the ground on those stations on Sir as well. What's the excitement move? What is the sense out there where you are about making this show happen?
The excitement is huge. I'm already getting excited. I'm just want to open a bottle of champagne already, but I can't. so I'm just relaxing right now with my Frenchie and just hoping for the best, which I'm pretty positive it'll be a hit.
Mm-hmm. And finally, because you have worked in the Spanish, what is your thoughts about where Latino television is going, both English as well as the Spanish language network situation, especially now that you have more players, more production companies being formed by Latinos to get on, whether
yes.
it's on the broadcast networks, the cable networks, the Netflixes, the Amazons, maybe through multi-channel
mm-hmm.
bundles, their own services. What's your thoughts about where we're going?
We're heading in the right direction. I mean, there are over 60 million Latinos in the U.S., and I think from coming from a time that people thought the only Latino TV was I Love Lucy, phenomenal show, but that wasn't really Latino TV, but people thought it was. We're heading in the right direction. I mean, Univision just launched their VIX Plus channel, and they're showing shows and telenovelas, and telenovelas are now attracting a younger audience as well. So I think we're finally heading in the right direction as opening up the field as to not just catering to one Latin American country, but to all Latin American countries. Because people at the end of the day want to see themselves reflected on TV, on film. So I think Latinos are doing better right now.
Mm-hmm. Daily Flash Latino, a new weekend series featuring news, featuring entertainment, pop culture, lifestyle segments, all aimed at the Latino audience, 60-plus million people all over the place. It begins tomorrow or Sunday, depending on where you are. It will definitely premiere Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 Pacific, on the LA TV network. That's available on cable, on satellite, also in some markets through multicast, and some markets through multi-channel bundles, distributed by smart TV sets and devices. It will also be running in more than 45 stations around the country. Check your local listings for where it will be running in your area. And also, it will be running throughout the weekend on Sir. That's the multi-channel bundle run by Sinclair, one of the nation's top TV station group owners. For more details about the show online, here's where you go, dailyflashshow.com. That's dailyflashshow.com. And don't forget Daily Flash going into its seventh season in more than 85 stations around the country and other places too. So check your local listings also for where that runs in your area, because it runs in different times on a weekday basis in syndication. Hugo Arenas, the executive producer of Daily Flash Latino, also involved with Daily Flash, the mothership of your enterprise, which, by the way, is KSA Entertainment. Thank you again for being with us. Everybody involved, have a great premiere weekend on this Labor Day weekend, and hopefully what happens this weekend, the beginning of a wonderful long run.
Simon, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Hugo. Take care. Enjoy the premiere, and have a fantastic weekend.
Likewise. Bye-bye.
Hugo Arenas joining us live from Orlando, Florida. Now time for our classic trivia question. Final time we're offering this question. Three prizes in play. Loud House Christmas card set from the folks at Nickelodeon, plus two best-selling books, Flirting with Fame by noted entertainment PR guru out of Hollywood, Dan Harari, and from Paul Friedman, the best-selling novel, The Unexpected Danny Green, also being looked at as a television series, both Paul and Dan, recent guests on this program. Here's the question. Who created Candid Camera? Who created Candid Camera? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember, enclose your name and where you're emailing from. If you're first with your answer, you win. If we don't get a win by the end of the day, we will post the question if we need to throughout the weekend starting tomorrow morning on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in, so do so, and all the very best. And one more time, I want to give a big shout-out to my sisters, Stephanie Rubin, who is out in Maryland and celebrates her birthday this Sunday, and wish her and her family and everybody involved a great, super, and superb Labor Day weekend. Love you always and forever. We're back with you on Tuesday. That's Tuesday and Friday next week. Joining us on Tuesday, we'll have some of the producers of 1S Network that's now several months in business on smart TV sets and devices. We first showcased them at their launch this year, earlier this summer. And joining us on our episode on Tuesday will be the Dutch foodie herself from the series Discover Curb Connect. We'll have producer Marianne Hospel, and from Khan Academy producers Elka Robinol and Kurt Jordan. If you came in late on today's episode, want to catch up on episode you missed, that's just not today's episode, but throughout the entire 2022 so far, go to our homepage. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. blogtalkradio.com/televised. And throughout the Labor Day weekend, you can check us out there or on tomorrowbetelevised.onpodium.com or on our various collection of podcast platforms, including podcast@google.com, also our newest one, podvine.com, and many, many more. Always love hearing from you. What do you think about our MASH retrospective about Daily Flash of Chino? What's your thoughts on where TV is at and where it's going? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. And you can also find me on social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. However you communicate, we do communicate back within 24 hours. Why? Because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed are those of the participants. They are not through those of Blog Talk Radio and other streamers of this program. Andy Toe is BeatStars General Manager. Jay Sonnenberg is Head of Content. Website certified by On Podium, the Internet's new podcast outpost. Guitarist Vegas is our web coordinator. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening, along with everybody at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, On Podium, and our wonderful assortment of podcast platforms. We all wish you a fantastic, joyful, peaceful Labor Day weekend. Spend it great, at least spend some with the people you love. And we'll be back on Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, Tuner Radio, On Podium, and all of our wonderful podcast affiliates. Whatever you're doing between now and then, again, make it safe, make it great, make it joyful, have a ball. And we'll be back with you, of course, on Tuesday. Until the next time, stay well, and, you know, stay tuned.